All right, everybody, thanks for joining us. I'll give you a quick heads up. The first hour we're going to be recording is a special episode of the Power Hour. Bruce Mallinson's joining us. The second hour we'll be doing Destination Health. Kim Cockerham will be with me for that. So we will be screening for maintenance and engine-related questions in the first hour and health questions in the second hour. So if you've got a health question and we screen your call, we'll be holding you till the second hour. We're going to go ahead and get started.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business
and Beyond,
the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website, letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers. If you've got a question about anything at all, pick up the phone, give me a call. We'll talk about it here on the air. We're going to get to the calls and questions in a little bit. This is a special episode of the Power Hour. Joining me will be Bruce Mallinson from Pittsburgh Power, and his technicians and engineers as well will be jumping in and helping us out with questions. We've got some things we're going to talk about. Before we get to that, I just want to talk a little bit about some of the numbers going on in the trucking industry right now that, boy, they are just all over the board, and I have no idea what it means, but it's just a really odd situation in trucking right now. Rates are just tanking. Every month, rates are dropping. Fuel prices are dropping, which is a part of the rates going down. Fuel is at like a seven-year low right now. Driver pay is going up, and truck orders just fell off the cliff. They went down so far. So I don't even know what to make of that, but it's not a good sign for fleets to deal with low rates, high driver pay, and, you know, not ordering new trucks. There's just some really strange numbers going on there. I think if this keeps up for long, if this is a trend, I think what you're going to see is more consolidation, meaning you're going to see bigger, more successful trucking companies buying some of the struggling carriers. And if these numbers keep up, there are going to be struggling carriers. Most trucking companies are just not that profitable anyway. And if they have to deal with lower rates but higher driver pay and higher truck cost. Now, there's another reason why you might see consolidation. Instead of a fleet going out and buying new trucks, which they're not, the orders have dropped way off. If you buy another trucking company, you get a lot of resources. You get trucks and drivers. And I think we're going to see another round of consolidation and companies buying up other companies. You know, I don't get too concerned about what's going on at the fleet level. It's just not my market. Owner-operators, you know, these are not really good signs either. Fuel prices are down. That's a bad thing for successful owner-operators who know how to manage fuel cost. We would much rather see a high fuel price and rates being down. So we will just have to wait and see. But I've said it many times. Those numbers might be interesting and they're something to talk about and we could going on. But what's far more important are your numbers. If you're doing the right things, no matter what happens with the economy or the industry, you'll be able to make money. So that's really where you should focus your time and energy. All right, joining me now from Pittsburgh Power, Bruce Mallinson. Bruce, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Kevin. As always, it's a pleasure to be on here. And we have Ethan Fortuna with us. Ethan is our lead engineer, and he was the engineer that was at the CMC last May. So he'll be handling all the electrical questions and even some of the mechanical questions.
Well, fantastic. So we've got questions on the line. We can jump right into those, or is there anything you guys want to open with?
Well, we want to open with, we love the 379 Peterbilt with the CAT and the NEDEC 4. However, there is an inherent problem with water intrusion, water leaking through the windshields as these trucks get 15 and 18 years old. People need to think about pulling the windshields out, replacing the rubber gasket, and resealing, because the water is coming into the backside of the fuse box. And that creates a lot of problems. You never see it. You don't see it until it's too late. And then it's a lot of labor to repair all that. I'm going to let Ethan touch on that.
We just had one in the shop the other day, actually, and it took about 2 days to fix all the little problems that water had gotten back in there and caused.
That was also the one where the battery cables, you would pull the ends off with your fingers.
Yeah, they were improperly crimped on there.
Okay. So what were some of the symptoms that truck had?
It initially came in with when you'd hit any switch on the dash, it would turn the fan on and the dash would lose power. And after that, also, he wasn't aware of it, but his brake lights weren't working either.
Right.
Those were two different problems, actually, where the water had gotten into. One was the main relay was full of water, which shorted it all out, and the other circuits had to be repaired individually.
And on the Detroit ECMs, when you pressure wash the engine, you should not hit the pressure washer on the front of the ECM. There is a weep hole there, and high-pressure water can get in there. We find a lot of corrosion inside. Also, didn't we just discover there's a battery in Caterpillar ECMs?
There is, but it doesn't seem like it goes bad very often there.
Okay.
It's extremely rare for it to give an issue.
Okay. What are some of the other ECM problems that you've recently found?
Mostly on the DDEC 3s and the 4s, the seals are going bad on them, especially if it's an older one.
That's the seal that holds the backing plate to the ECM.
Yes, and what we're finding is when we open it up, it's full of water, fuel, road, grime, just laying around.
Okay. Okay. That's it, Kevin. We're ready for calls.
Let me comment on that, because all of those things, some water intrusion coming in the windshield, water getting into the ECMs, those are the kind of problems that when I get the call here, typically people are just frustrated. They're dealing with all kinds of electrical issues that don't seem to make sense. They've been to multiple shops and nobody can figure it out. So these might sound like small problems, but these can really be expensive and time-consuming, because most shops just aren't very good at diagnosing this kind of stuff.
Well, most of us were old-school mechanics, and we were used to checking electronics with a 12-volt test light. That doesn't work anymore.
Yeah. No, much more sophisticated.
We have a Freightliner in here today, a DDEC. DDEC 3, and what was the fan staying on all the time?
Yeah, and we're currently taking the backplate off the ECM there, because where they locate the driver for the fan solenoid is on the bottom of the ECM on that case,
okay,
which is just where that seal is probably going to be bad.
Okay. So he's been to various shops to try to find out why his fan's staying on, and we think it's going to be water intrusion. In fact, we may know. Leroy's working on that right now. We'll find out before this hour is over.
Okay, interesting. So, when I get these calls anymore and people are frustrated and they want, an answer, it's impossible for me to even begin to diagnose or troubleshoot a call like that on the phone. But what I've been telling people is you've been to two or three shops, the downtime, the aggravation, the frustration, they're not finding it. You really need to get to Pittsburgh. And if you've got to drop your trailer and bobtail and spend a couple days, it will be worth it, because you guys really are kind of on the cutting edge of diagnosing and fixing a lot of these problems.
Yeah. It's, we've always been there, always tried to figure out why something doesn't work. And it was, I can say it was much easier when I did the big cams. It's gotten much more difficult now.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, you had talked about the 379 Pete, and we have a call on hold. That should be perfect.
Good.
Let's head on over there. We're going to go to Washington. Al, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Happy to be part of your world.
Great to have you here. What's on your mind today?
My 379. I've got all the goodies on there. It's a 2004 that I am bridged it. It's got a nice 500 horse 1850 torque. 6 inch Z's sitting on there. I got all the goodies on there. I've got all the custom turbo, stock manifold, but custom turbo, the Turbo 3000, the fast fuel system. I average about 5.8, but I'm in Phoenix going to Oregon, Washington, so I hit the wind in the mountains all the time. And I average 65 miles an hour. So I think, I know it's not your favorite truck, but with the Pittsburgh Power Box.
Okay, Al, hey, hold that thought. Bruce, he's wondering if the power box would be something worthwhile for him. So we're going to get to a break. We'll come right back and we'll talk about that. Stick around. Kevin Rothenberg. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. Joining me today from Pittsburgh Power, and we're going to go back to Washington. Al, so your question was whether or not the Pittsburgh Power Box would be a benefit to you, correct?
Yes, correct.
Okay. My question is, who did the ECM for you?
There's a guy in Fontana called the Cat Doctor, and he's pretty good old dude. He just works on nothing but cats. He could tell if a motor is not running right off if the overhead's not right just by listening to him. And he's always dialed my truck pretty good for a while. So he's
How many pound of turbo boost do you make?
I average about 31, 32 at the most.
Okay, so you're just right in there at 550 horsepower.
A little bit under that 550, yeah.
Okay. A little bit under 550.
Yeah, because he has it set at 500 horse. That's what he told me. It's a 500 horse, 1850 torque setting that he put on there.
Okay. And you have did you say you had a stock manifold?
Yes.
Okay, if you put our manifold on, you're going to gain at least a quarter mile per gallon. And what turbo do you have on there?
It's made by this guy in Corvallis, Oregon, where he got a 600 stock turbo, and he put these turbines, these bigger, like an inch diameter turbines with more fins on both sides from Europe, because he's an actual BorgWarner warranty repair turbo guy. He's got a weird name, Pius, Ebro Pius. Do you know him? He says.
Yeah, I know Pius. I've known Pius for years.
Yeah. He's like a little mad scientist making all kinds of crazy turbos up here. And so I bought his. Yeah, I bought his. He calls it the mother. I got the mother point two, where where he saw these turbines in, I guess, one of the magazines he gets. And so he decided he could probably cut the make it fit into a 600 cat turbo. And that's how. And they're, what is it, the aluminum that's, what do you call that, that's crushed, forged aluminum is the little turbines are made out of that. He was explaining to me versus the cast how much better that is.
Well, we're using billet wheels now, so is he talking about billet?
No, just forged aluminum, he said. Yeah, forged aluminum.
Yeah. It's interesting. I don't know. It doesn't sound right to me. And coming from Europe, Europe doesn't have any parts that'll fit with an American turbo, a BorgWarner turbo, or a Holset, or an Air Research. So, but let's not worry about that. I think you should overnight us your ECM and let's look at the program and set it up properly and put our manifold on there. And I think with those two items, you're going to gain about 3/4 mile per gallon.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And I would
rather
do that first because the power box is a great item, but the ECM has to be right. And I know you feel strongly about your guy that did the ECM, but maybe we might know something that he doesn't about that ECM.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah.
And we save everyone's program, so your program will be in our archive, and if you don't like our program better than his, we'll put his back in it. But that's where I would start with that truck. Do you have stock mufflers on that?
No, I got your mufflers on there.
Okay. Well,
that was
good.
My first purchase there.
You don't have 336 gears, do you?
255s with an 18 speed.
255, so you're running in 16th gear?
You mean
355s, yeah. 355.
I was going to say, if you had 255s,
yeah,
I want to know where you got that, because I never heard of that ratio.
Yeah. I'm sorry, yeah, my error there.
Okay. Okay.
55.
All right, that's where I think we should go. So give us a call, and we'll give you an order number and overnight that ECM into us. If you send it on a Friday afternoon, you'll have it back Tuesday morning.
Oh, okay. Okay. What kind of cost am I looking at for something like that?
Maximum would be $1,250.
Okay. All right. I'm going to be in the event that I do that. I'm going to be at the CMC. Will you be able to do that there?
No. But while you're
at
the CMC, send it here, and Leroy will do it because Ethan's going to be with me at the CMC.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Okay.
Gotcha. Okay.
All right.
We'll see you
in May.
All right. Good stuff. We'll see you then. Looking forward to it. We're going to head off to Ohio this time. Herschel, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Hey, Bruce.
Hi, Herschel.
Bruce?
How are you?
Oh, pretty good. You've taught me a lot of things over the years. But you know, there's one thing you taught me that I don't think I will ever forget.
Alan
Goble's phone number.
Why is that?
Who could forget 303-289, one of the best engines there is, and nobody wants 3318.
That's right.
I'll never forget that.
That's how I remember people's names, numbers, addresses. I have to associate it to an engine or
a car.
That's
right. That's right. Anyway, cooling system on a 04 DDEC 4, 14-liter, Columbia. I know the basics of it. You have your radiator in the front. There's a great big line that comes over to your thermostats. You got the big line that comes off the bottom over to your water pump. And that used to be pretty much it. And everything circulated. You had a cap on a radiator. Well, now you got that daggone surge tank on the firewall. And there's a big line that comes off it, about a 1.5 inch. And it goes over to the water pump. And then there's two small ones, one for just overflow, and the other one, I'm not sure what it does. But it goes over to the head on the passenger side. I was testing my coolant, because this one actually has a water filter. I was testing it to see about the DCAs. And on the test strip package, I had bought a different brand. It said to not test in the surge tank because you'll get a faulty reading. And I'm thinking, where else would I get antifreeze to test it? And does the stuff in the bottle on the firewall Does it ever circulate? I'm looking at it and thinking of it, and I'm thinking, how in the world does that ever circulate?
The tank on the firewall they put on, there's actually an expansion tank. It gives it room to, you know, whenever your engine's cold and hot, you'll actually see that that has a different level. It does move around a little bit, but not near as much as what the other, what's in the system, in within the engine and the radiator. It'll pull from that tank if you happen to have a coolant leak, like if you develop a small leak, it'll start pulling from that tank in order to, you know, maintain the coolant system integrity there. But basically, if you'll see on a lot of those tanks, it'll be marked full cold, you know, engine cold and engine hot, and you'll have two different levels. And basically, you know, as you know, most things do, the fluid will expand whenever you heat it up. So you, and in the end, you never want to top that tank off entirely, or else you'll have an overflow event there.
Right, right. I keep it at the cold level and check it cold just to make sure. But my real issue to me, in my mind, and maybe I'm overthinking this, if I dunk the test strip in that surge tank, expansion tank, whatever you want to call it, am I getting a true test for the SCA additives? And if not, how do I get a good test of that?
A lot of the systems on the bottom, that the bottom hose, they'll have it's a metal line. They'll have like a little petcock there you can drain some out of. And I think what they're concerned about is if that the fluid in that tank doesn't get circulated near as much as what's in the rest of the engine, so you won't get a good reading, you know, based on what's in that little bit that's in that tank.
Well, that makes sense. But then again, if we put the additive in the bottle that's up on the firewall, because it's the only place you have, there's no cap on the radiator, how in the world does it ever get its way down into the radiator and through the engine the way that it should? I don't know.
It would take a long time there. Your best bet would be to drain some of the coolant out, mix it in with it, and then refill the system.
Okay, well, I do have the pre-charged water filter on there that has the stuff in it, so, I mean, that's definitely a plus.
Hey, Herschel, there's another possibility here. Why not switch to the long life, and you won't have to test at all?
Well, you know, that's a good thought, but I even have looked into that a little bit, and through talking to the guys even at Pittsburgh Power, that red stuff is not good on a D-Deck 4. You shouldn't do that. I've heard a lot of horror stories about that red stuff in here.
Well, and we get, there is a concern if you've got, because if we say red stuff or blue stuff and go by colors, but I have to believe that there is a long life coolant that's designed for the D-Deck 4, isn't there?
I don't really know.
Okay, I'm going to get to a break. Hey guys, Bruce, Ethan. You guys deal with this a lot. Maybe not. Maybe we should stick with the old standard coolant. But it seems to me like there is an approved long life for a D-Deck 4. But we'll talk about that more when we get back. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're doing a special episode of the Power Hour. Joining me, Bruce and Ethan from Pittsburgh Power, and we were talking with Herschel in Ohio. You know, Bruce, several years ago, I guess it's been almost five now, I did a ton of research on coolant, and was surprised at how complicated it could be and how many shops didn't understand what coolant should go in what engine. The problem is I don't have my notes in front of me, and I don't remember a lot of what I learned. Is there an approved long-life coolant that will work in the DDEC 4?
You know, I'm not sure, but Don, my service manager, would be the one that I would have to ask. So right after the show, I will meet with him, and we'll give Herschel a call.
Oh,
got
thanks,
it.
Bruce. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah, again, I know that, you know, it might be a big deal changing it all, but the additives, which is what you're testing for, all the coolant is the same. Whether it's standard or long life, it's all basically the same. It's a mix of glycol and water. The difference in standard and long life are the additives. In standard, the additives get depleted very quickly, and that's why we would use the charged water filter to keep the additives up. And in the long life, they have additives that last supposedly about 700,000 miles. So you don't really have to worry about testing them, and you can just spin a blank cartridge on. So it's a possibility, or you can find a way to get coolant out easy if you've got a petcock and keep testing it.
Okay. Thank you.
Hi, Herschel.
You're
welcome.
If you don't
hear from us within the hour after the show, call me.
Okay, will do. Thanks, Bruce.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Sounds good. Let's head off to Ontario. Anthony, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin and Bruce. Hey, a while ago, I remember you making some comments that you was getting concerned with some of the Fitzgerald gliders because they was using the Detroit 60 series engine and they wasn't performing like they should have been. And you were thinking that might have been a problem with getting, because they were, you know, rebuilding so many of them, putting them in the gliders kits. So I wanted to get an update on that, what your thinking is on that now. And also, you did a experiment with the Cummins N14, putting that in the glider, and see if you could comment on that too.
Well, we didn't do the N14 in the glider yet. Most of the N14s that we're building are still in trucks that are running. On the Fitzgerald, we're not saying there's a power problem. There is a slight glitch in the turbo boost gauge and what the ECM sees as to what the boost is telling you, and I'll let Ethan talk about that.
One thing we've noticed with it, a common thing where your dash will only read somewhere between 21 and 25 pounds of boost. When I'm quite sure that the engine's making somewhere around 30.
Okay.
So okay. We do have a cure for that. In fact, we're doing two of them right now.
Where is
Bruce,
the cure in
the
ECM?
Other thing.
Nothing. The cure is in some programming.
Yeah, it's a miscalibration of the boost sensor there.
First, the other thing I think you might be referring to is the, it really wasn't, we didn't see it on the Fitzgerald gliders. I saw it on Harrison and a couple others where the fuel economy was just horrible on the Series 60 and we couldn't figure out why. And then we came to the conclusion that it could have been wrong parts used in the in-frame because they were having trouble getting parts. And Detroit even replaced a couple of those engines. They acknowledged that there were problems. So there has been some talk on this show, and I've brought it up, that the supply chain for the Series 60, sometimes it's tough getting parts for them.
Yeah, the problem was not the Fitzgerald glider, but it was the Harrison.
Okay. Okay. And Detroit is aware of it now, and they have addressed that. Okay.
Yeah, and we're not saying not to build a Series 60. It was just, you know, when we saw it was getting hard to get parts when you needed them, then we started looking at why not use the N14, because it's a really good engine as well.
Okay. But it's still, right now, the Detroit 60 is the engine that's still being used mostly. And no matter who is, you know, Fitzgerald or Harrison, all of them are using the Detroit still mostly.
For the most part, yeah. I mean, you know, people are building gliders with cats, a couple with N14s, but primarily I think people are still using the Series 60. And honestly, in the last year, I haven't seen much of a problem. I don't know if the parts supply is getting better, but I haven't had one of those, you know, fuel mileage problem calls in probably a year.
Okay. All right, I just wanted to get an update on that. I didn't catch the show. You probably talked about it before. But quickly, just talking about the windshield leaking on the trucks at the beginning of the show. I'm driving a O11 International ProStar, and it's got those back windows in the sleeper compartment on each side. They're tinted, and it's leaking through there. So it's probably be the same fix. Just take the engine off and replace the rubber padding or whatever and seal it again. You think?
Yeah, you said take the engine off. You mean take the window out.
Window out, yeah.
All right. You don't want to take the engine out to try to fix a water leak in a window, right? Okay. So, yeah, that's what I would do. Take it out and look and see what's making it, what's sealing it. And if you don't open them, just seal them shut with some clear silicone.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Bruce.
Hey, Jackie Warmley just sent me a text, and it said, using extended life red coolant in a Detroit diesel must be nitrate-free. Detroit Diesel Corporation does not recommend the use of long-life coolant with their with nitrate in their medium and heavy-duty engines. This also includes the Mercedes-Benz MBE 9000 and MBE 4000. This is in response to a field complaint. So, anyway, that's from Jackie. Thank you, Jackie.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I was shooting for was, you know, there a lot of people think there's only standard and long life. And that's not true. There's standard, there's long life, there's nitrate, there's several different formulations. And I was sure that one of them is a long life coolant that works in the DDEC 4. And now that she brought that up, I remember that's what it was. So no matter what engine you have, no matter whether you're going to use standard or long life, you really need to make sure you've got the recommended coolant for each engine. Otherwise, you can run into issues with seals and metals that aren't compatible with the stuff that's in the coolant. So, Jackie, thank you for that. That's exactly what we were looking for. Let's head off to Memphis. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Hey, Bruce. How y'all doing today?
Good.
Oh, good. Glad to hear. Hey, I appreciate you guys doing another hour of the Power Hour. I had a couple of questions about this 05 Volvo with the 475 ISX, and I was curious about overhead on this engine. The previous owner of the truck said he had gotten the overhead done. I'm not sure how long ago, but I've had the truck about 120,000 miles, and I was going to see if that's about a good interval to go ahead and get it done.
I would.
I believe Cummins recommends about every 100,000 miles to get that checked. Just to be on the safe side even there, because things tend to, even just your normal wear and tear, they'll start to move a little bit there.
Yeah, that's a...
Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
We have a guy that's having accelerated camshaft wear on an ISX. I just wanted to bring this up, what's on my mind. We are going to, what's that called when you deep freeze a part?
Cryogenic.
We're cryogenic a camshaft for him right now. So it'll be interesting to see if that fixes his problem. But go ahead, back to your valve adjustments.
Okay, great. Well, I also had an issue. I told you all last week I was pulling Mont Eagle with about 45,000 in the box going eastbound, and it's a pretty good pull. You know, you're flat out in 8th, 7th gear trying to get up the mountain there and looking at that power box for sure from Pittsburgh Power to help me when I do have to pull that mountain. And apparently my exhaust manifold, the very top of it, and my downpipe right off the turbo have turned bright white. And I know usually that's probably from excessive heat. Could that mean the engine is running lean?
No.
Have you guys seen that before?
No, there is no such thing as lean and mixed and rich on a diesel engine. People say, well, the engine's running rich because they have smoke coming out their stack. That means they have injector problems or valve and injector adjustment problems.
Okay. So if the valves are a little tight, the overhead might go ahead and fix that.
Yeah, or if the injectors are a little bit loose.
Okay, sure. Well, I appreciate your help, guys. Thank you so much.
Welcome.
All right. I've got to get to a break. We will be right back. Stick around. We've got more stuff right around the corner. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Everybody, quick heads up, we're heading into the fourth segment here. That means at the end of this hour, I'm going to say goodnight, goodbye, all that stuff. Don't hang up because we're going to come back and we're going to do an hour of Destination Health right after this. So we'll start screening calls for that right now. Right now, though, we're going to get to the final segment with Pittsburgh Power. Here we go. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're down to the final segment. We're doing a special episode today of the Power Hour. Joining me, Bruce Mallinson and Ethan from Pittsburgh Power, and we're taking your engine and maintenance-related calls. We're going to get right back to them. We're going to head off to Pennsylvania. Robert, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call. I have a 2010 ProStar with an ISX, 550 horse, 1850 torque, no emissions. My loads are about 50-50, half heavy, half light. And I was wondering, what would be the best gear ratio I could go with that setup?
264. Run the transmission
okay.
Indirect. Is it a 13 or an 18 speed?
A 10 speed.
Oh, it's a 10 speed. Well, then you'd run it in ninth gear?
That's what I want to do. But if I try in ninth gear now, I have to go like 50. And I usually
right.
run around 60 is my normal cruising speed.
Right. So 60
okay, so
is
264.
Yep.
Okay,
now, that's an Eaton gear ratio. If you have Meritors, you'd have to call Meritor and find out what their equivalent is.
Okay. And while we're at it, what would be your top suggestion for an upgrade to increase mileage?
Do you have our manifold on it?
What's that?
Do you have our manifold on it?
No.
Okay, the manifold would be a place to start. You
okay.
might want to stop by and let us look and see who's programmed or how they programmed your ECM, because there's 6,400 parameters in that ECM, and it's a very difficult one to program. So if you can get by here someday, give us a call and say, hey, I'll be there tomorrow. Maybe we can fit you in and just look at the programming and see where you are.
Okay.
Okay, so those are my first two suggestions.
All right, appreciate it.
Okay.
And I'll throw in one. Robert, do you have a scan gauge yet?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. That's always one of my first recommendations. So inexpensive, and it teaches you so much about driving that truck for fuel economy. Let's head off to Indiana. Mark, welcome to the program.
How you doing, gentlemen?
Good.
I got a question. Now, I think you guys are missing a big opportunity on the Volvo engines. In the Chicagoland area, there must be Volvos everywhere. We're all with the D12. And there's a lot of companies now styling power boxes from down to 2005 all the way up to the year 2015. From 50 horsepower all the way to 150 horsepower, just bolt on. These these guys, I know I talked to the guy that makes these, and they private labels them under different names, but they sell them all over the world with these things. And I have a couple of people that have them on, and they run extremely well. Most of them are running, they get almost about 7/10 to about a mile per gallon, just bolting it on. I was wondering if you guys even going in that direction with that engine, or because there is a ton of those out there and they're performing very well.
Last week we talked about that, and when I called the local Volvo dealer that's friends of ours, I said, how many specialty tools do I need to work on the Volvo engine? And he said, pallets full. That's number one. Number two, then you got to get to the schools. You got to figure it all out. And we can hold about 14 trucks in our shop, and right now there's 14 in there, Cats, Cummins, and Detroits. So I'm out of room. I don't have room. I have 3.5 acres, and I don't have room to put up another building. So I really don't have room to get involved with another engine right now. And Volvo is very tight on not wanting to help you. I mean, I was speaking to the vice president of Cummins today in regards to camshafts on Big Cam Cummins, because we're so busy supplying parts for Big Cams, they're coming out of the woodwork right now. And I'm able to call anybody. I can even call the president on his personal line at Cummins. I can't do that with Volvo. And I have the head engineer at Detroit. I can call him anytime I want. Caterpillar is a little bit tougher, but I've got a lot of friends that are Caterpillar experts if there's a question we can't answer. So now, to get involved in another engine at this point, I just can't do it. You know, you want to be the best at what you do, and you can't be the best at everything. And it's just not feasible for us at this time to get involved with the Volvo engine.
Yeah, Bruce, you know, and that number, when he says there's a lot of them, that's a very relative number. Because I watch truck sales, I watch engine sales, I watch them every month. I've been watching them for about 15 years. And the number of Volvo engines in this country is very, very minimal. Now, there are places, and he mentioned Chicago, where it may feel like there's a lot, but in reality, when you compare the number of Volvo engines compared to the number of the big three, it's not even close. So really, the fact that you are busy, the fact that this isn't a very popular engine and that it does require so many tools and you're not getting a lot of support, you know, I'm sure the people with the engine would love to have you do something, but it really doesn't make a lot of sense.
We just took an ISX in a Volvo, 2006 or 7, reworked it, did not rebuild the engine, just retuned things. And he was averaging 6. He pulls containers around Chicago, so he's constantly in traffic. Occasionally he goes up to Green Bay. He sent me a movie the other day. He was doing 9.5 mile per gallon, but he's averaging 8.3 to 8.5, and he was at 6. So there you go. And that was a brand new program that Leroy came up with. That was our very first program for that particular engine. And that's how we want to be able to do it. My God, to gain 2.5 miles of a gallon, and on that one trip he was up 3.5. Now, keep in mind, he's empty one way, but he is in constant traffic. So to get involved, I just don't have the manpower or the space to get involved in another engine.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, okay. Let's grab another call. Let's head off to New York. Bob, welcome to the program.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for taking my call, Bruce. I have a question. You answered one of my questions earlier about the 475 engine having to have a overhead done on it, so I won't touch on that one. But I do have a brand new Recon 475 engine in this truck. The other engine, I had a 5-inch turbo. This engine, when it came from the manufacturer, it came with 4-inch. Is
four
there
inch.
Much modification the input and the output are 4-inch?
Right.
A Cummins turbo,
right, so,
I guess.
So what year is the truck?
2005.
So if you had a 5-inch outlet before, That meant that should have been a 2002 and older ISX. They went to the 4-inch to create back pressure when they went to EGR to help force the EGR, the exhaust gas, back through the engine.
Okay.
You know, back then if you go to the larger turbo, you go back up to the 5-inch pipe. So is this an EGR engine that you have?
The engine that I had to put back in here because of EBA, yes, it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
so,
I'd like to do an EGR delete on it, and what I was wondering is, do I have to change the manifold out and everything to do the EGR delete, or can I just block it off?
No. Well, this is not the place for us to talk about that, but
okay.
I guess you could, however you're going to do it, you could, if you want to block it, go ahead.
The other question I have is just by putting a 5-inch back on it, I know it's going to screw up on the EGR. Is that going to throw codes and stuff in my computer?
Yeah, you can't do it because that turbo talks to the ECM. So long as you're with EGR, you have to stay with that 4-inch outlet.
Okay, that's what I wanted to know.
Okay.
All right, sir. Thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome.
All right, Bruce. So I can't believe it, but we have just blown through this hour, and this is something we're going to be doing every week. We have lots of calls and questions all the time for you guys, so we're excited about the new show. But we've only got about a minute left here. Anything you guys want to wrap up with?
I'll let Ethan have the last minute.
Just to make sure that when you go places, to watch out for people in the parking lots. Just because you have a laptop doesn't mean you can do everything. And that person is going to disappear the minute he drives off. And, well, if you have a phone number, it may or may not work for him. Because anything is, you got to watch where you get the work done.
We get a lot
Ethan,
things that have been screwed up from parking lot tuners.
One of the worst things I saw was somebody had all of the safety shutdowns turned off on the engine, and the owner of the truck didn't even realize it, and it was one of those parking lot mechanics. Hey, we blew right through that hour. We will do this again, so thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time. Be safe, be profitable, be fit and healthy, always. Do the hard work and master the journey. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next time on the webinar. All right, everybody, thanks. We are making a transition today. So we're going from the Pittsburgh Power Hour right into Destination Health. So give us a couple minutes here. We need to clear the board. And now is your chance. If you have a health question, now would be the time to press 1 on your phone, and I promise we will get to you. If you've got a question about health, fitness, nutrition, eating on the road, whether it's a question, a comment, a topic, something you want to share with us, whatever it might be, press 1 on your phone right now, and we will start screening those calls. All right. Give me just a minute here. All right, we're working on the board right now, and we're getting ready to get started. We're screening some calls and getting set up again. If you have questions about health, questions, comments, topics, whatever it might be, today is your opportunity. If you press 1 right now, I promise we will get to you. The longer you wait, sometimes the harder it is to get through. We are about 2 minutes away from getting started here, so just bear with me. We're going to get started. Here we go.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs.
Back in your pocket.
Welcome to our world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. Today is another special episode of Destination Health. Joining me is my co-host, Kim Cockerham. And this is the show where we talk about everything health and how to stay fit and healthy on the road, how to eat, how to exercise, and how to cure disease with diet and nutrition. Kim, welcome to the show.
Hi, glad to be here, Kevin.
Great to have you here. Hey, I've got a couple things I want to talk about, and we'll see if there's anything you want to open with today. We've got calls on the line, so we'll get to those. You know, we had a caller a while back where we were tracking his cholesterol numbers, and he went to a ketogenic diet and his numbers improved, and then he was off statins. And was that also the caller where now he's got some elevated cholesterol numbers? Do you remember that one? Uh-oh, I think we lost Kim. We will work on getting her back, and in the meantime, I will talk about the reason I was asking about that. I know I saw an email, and I was doing some follow-up on that. I happened to find an article that addressed that issue. Now, the interesting thing was it's pretty rare. So the ketogenic diet has been shown many, many times to improve all of the cholesterol numbers. So LDLs tend to not only go down, but also improve in size. So with LDL cholesterol, we're looking for the big fluffy kind and not the small dense kind. That number improves, HDL improves, triglycerides improve. That is pretty well accepted now. There's nobody really arguing the fact that a high-fat, low-carbohydrate diet consistently improves those cholesterol numbers and all of the markers with cholesterol. So the article, though, talks about a pretty rare phenomenon. 1-2% of the population who tend to end up with very, very elevated numbers being on a ketogenic diet. And again, really rare. 1-2% end up with extremely elevated numbers, like total cholesterol going over 400. There's not a lot known about this yet. There isn't a lot of research about it. There does seem to be some indication that cutting back, not going back to a low-fat diet, that's not what I'm talking about, but cutting back some of the fat and some of the total calories and switching to some of the monounsaturated fats, like good fats from seafood, salmon, olive oil, avocado oil, some of the fats that are higher in monounsaturates and even some of the polyunsaturates improves that number. So, again, it's pretty rare. I don't know if that's what we were dealing with with that issue or not, but it's something to take a look at. But again, there just isn't a lot of information right now about this. In fact, very little information about these really high cholesterol numbers. But again, it's 1 to 2% of the population that could see these kind of numbers. We, across the board, we see really, really improved numbers when it comes to cholesterol and the ketogenic diet. So I will follow up. We'll see. I'll go back and do some research on that call and see if that's what we're dealing with. And if so, we'll work with them. There are some ideas. So we will... We'll be talking about that more in the future. One of the other things I wanted to talk about today, because I get this question a lot, is what are some of the downsides of a ketogenic diet? And the downsides that I found all occur early on, and they are all fairly simple to alleviate as long as you know what to do. So those were some of the things that I was going to talk about today, and then we're going to get to some of your calls and questions. One of the more common, and I experienced this and I get lots of calls and questions about this, was the leg cramps or muscle cramps, but they tend to show up primarily in the legs when you first switch over to a ketogenic diet. And that's fairly common. And I experienced it, and it is one of the more common problems we see with the ketogenic diet early on. So couple things that you can do, and we know why. One of the things that happens on a ketogenic diet is that you end up losing a lot of water. Carbohydrates really hold on to water, and when you drop the carbohydrates, you lose the glycogen that's stored in your muscles. And for every one molecule of glycogen you lose 3 to 4 molecules of water. That's why people notice a really rapid weight loss in the first couple weeks. And it is your body's metabolism normalizing back to that, to the water level the way it should be. Most people on a high carbohydrate diet are bloated and holding way too much water. So this is a good thing, but we also have to be aware that when you lose that water, you are also losing minerals and electrolytes, and that's where the muscle cramping comes in. We also see that you can see more constipation early on, and again, it's the loss of water and the loss of the minerals and electrolytes that are doing that. So what you've got to do is make sure you're drinking plenty of water and also make sure you are getting enough of the minerals. And if you have to supplement for a while, that would be okay. I'm not a huge fan of supplements, but if we're targeting specific problems and we're using targeted supplements, then that can be of benefit. So the three things you need to watch for, well, four, water, salt, and try to get good sea salt, magnesium, and potassium. So if you are getting salt, magnesium, potassium in a good balance, you will solve many of these early problems or symptoms, sometimes referred to as the keto flu. And again, don't worry about them. Fairly common. We know why they happen. They're not dangerous, and they're pretty easy to fix. And your body does adjust to them over time. But if you are getting any of these symptoms, that is a sign. And one of the things we need to get better at is listening to our body and then solving the problem. not just covering up the symptoms, which is what traditional medicine is very good at. In fact, it's about all they do. And under the ketogenic, paleo-type lifestyle, diet, however you want to refer to it, we don't want to do that. We don't want to cover up symptoms. We want to solve the underlying problems. And the underlying problems are usually a mineral imbalance or a mineral or electrolyte deficiency that happens early on. So something to keep in mind. I do get that question a lot. I wanted to make sure we covered that. One of the good foods to eat, avocados. And eat the avocado with salt and lime. Throw some cilantro in there, too. It tastes amazing. And between the salt and the minerals in the avocado itself, you're going to solve a lot of these problems with food. You could also look up foods that are high in potassium and high in magnesium. You can use Epsom salts to soak with. And you can even supplement those, and those will take care of some of these problems while you're making that transition. I've got to get to a break. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Dunbar. All right, everybody, I hate to say this, but our show platform, Blog Talk Radio, has crashed, and it's not a local problem. I thought it was my internet, but Lisa's having the same issue, and I just got a message that their engineers are aware of it, and they're working on it. But without Blog Talk, we don't have a show, so... give me just a minute here. I'm going to try and see if I can pull it up, but it doesn't look like it. So I hate to say it, but it looks like we're going to have to cancel the rest of the show today. I'm trying right now, but I'm just not able to get anything on Blog Talk at all. So sorry for the problem. We'll let you know that I have been working on a backup system. There's just not a lot in the way of Blog Talk and a system that would work like this, but we are working on a backup. Sorry again, and we've got to cancel today. Thanks for joining us, though. All right, everybody, it looks like we got the system back up, but I think it's too late because we lost all of our calls, so I don't know exactly what happened there, but I'm just not able to... Hold on, everybody, hold on.